Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock.
Yay.
Your friends in horror for a long, long time. In internet podcasting years, we have been around about as long as the longest living lassie.
Wow. That's an accomplishment.
So, yep, here we are. And, hey, it's the end of the year, and it is Indeed. That time again.
That's slime.
I don't mean it's time to watch that? The trailer for the new Avengers movie or find out what the new title is.
Who cares?
But we're going to be discussing our favorite, our best, what we consider to be the best horror films of the year that was, 2018.
Woohoo!
And you know what? I'm Johnny Numb. Joining me, as always, is...
Billy Crash.
Absolutely.
And we've watched combined 90 new horror films for this year.
And most of those are Billy's.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. And you know what, Bill? I just want to ask you a question to get things rolling.
Yes.
Did you think it was a good year for horror?
That's a funny question, because I was thinking, actually, with like my top five, I was like, they're really good movies, but they're not, there isn't one that's like super amazing to me. Like,
okay.
They all were like, oh, these are good, but kind of thing. And I didn't see one particular movie blow the rest of the field away, so to speak.
Okay.
But I think overall, with my best and worst, I think it was a better year for horror than the worst is the worst. but the best, I mean, there were a lot that were, you know, pretty darn good. Even ones that I didn't necessarily agree with, all the hyper talk and crap.
Right.
Except for one movie in particular. I thought I was impressed with a lot of films. But ultimately, everything fell a little bit short to me.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I actually... I was pulling together my list, and I had more good movies on, mm-hmm. on my best of list than bad movies on my worst of list.
Yeah.
So I would consider that kind of, for me personally, I thought 2018 was a win.
Yes.
And perhaps it comes down to how I sort of, I think I might grade a bit more generously also.
Mm-hmm.
When I watch movies, though, it all, you know, always depends on the movie itself. So,
yeah.
So I was just curious to get your feelings on that, because I know you were kind of disappointed at a late point in the year, Bill. Kind of like, I guess you might have seen some good stuff that
mm-hmm.
might have pulled things out of the mire for you. But
yeah, I haven't added a movie to my ultra best of list since Green Room, and I don't even really consider it. If it wasn't listed as a horror, I wouldn't have even included it, because I don't really necessarily see it as a horror movie, but because it is, that's like the last movie I added to the best of.
Oh, well, that was over a year ago.
It was 2016.
Yeah, oh, actually, shit.
So
yeah, you're right. Yeah.
I mean, Get Out came really close. I need to see Get Out again.
But did you only see it the one time?
Yeah, I could, because it just overwhelmed me so much.
Okay.
It touched a lot of nerves in the right way.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. And I guess, do you want to get started, Bill? What we're going to do per the usual is kind of work our way up to our top five
mm-hmm.
and maybe start kind of... usually rate on a 5-star scale kind of when we're appraising things. So
yeah.
For me, like a 3 and up would be something that would appear on the best of list.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So like around that level, Bill, do you have any
3-star films? Yeah. Okay. I have 5. I have The Endless, which we did a show on,
right.
Which I think is interesting, people, if you liked Resolution, or if you didn't, you might like this more. Cam got a lot of really big hype, and it's a good movie, but the third act was absolutely ludicrous.
Bill, where is that streaming? Because I haven't seen that yet.
I got that off of, I think I saw that on Netflix.
Okay, all right.
The lead actress is amazing, and they had some great tension, but then they squandered it. How it ends is okay. Maybe that's even a 5. Forget it. Forget I even mentioned it. The Open House, I thought that was, a lot of people didn't talk about that, but that was a darn good movie about people have an open house, and then it's like, wait, did this one person really leave?
Okay.
So right. You got your creep factor.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so those would be the okay ones for me.
All right.
What about you, man?
I don't know. I had a bunch of, like, 3 out of 5s. Actually, maybe not many more than that, but, The Meg, I wrote a review of that for Crash Palace back in summer. You know what? There was some good dumb fun to be had with horror movies this year, and that is definitely good dumb fun to be had. Great cast. A B-list cast that really knows what they're getting into, and if you're into the type of absurdly big monster movies, you should have a fun time with it. This is one I crammed in at the last minute. What Keeps You Alive, from Colin Minahan, who did It Stains the Sands Red.
Oh, and I like that one.
Yeah, and this one also has Brittany Allen.
Oh my God, I need to see it.
In a totally different, you won't recognize her from.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love her, man. Yeah. I fucking love her.
You know, I was kind of on the fence with that one because I was like, it did a lot of things really well.
Right.
But it bears certain similarities to another movie that came out earlier this year. Oh. And I think it's kind of like that Sixth Sense Stir of Echoes kind of.
Oh, gotcha.
So it didn't quite stand out as much as it could have.
That's cool, though. I gotta check that out.
A movie that's getting sort of hyped as the next big midnight cult action horror movie is Upgrade from Lee Wannell. I thought it was just okay, but it's a movie I could see myself introducing other people to down the road. It would probably be a good have a few beers and watch with friends movie.
Okay.
I don't quite see it as the new classic it's being hailed as.
Oh God.
But
I never heard of it until right now.
Well, it was a really limited release, but
I'm sick of that limited release shit.
Well,
release it or don't.
Well, I guess by limited I mean it was like Blumhouse Tilt, which is like,
oh, Blumhouse, yeah.
Well, it was like an even smaller subsidiary of Blumhouse, so it was playing at one theater near me and it played for a week. So
yeah, but like with Suspiria up here, limited release, I didn't get it around here at all. I'd have to drive to like New York City or Philadelphia for that crap.
Yeah, I had to drive to Lancaster to see it, and that's 45
minutes away. Lancaster, there's fucking Amish people there. Like, why are they gonna?
It was the city, Bill. It wasn't in a barn. Okay.
Jeez.
I should probably leave this one off because you're going to talk about it. But
no, don't. I think it's important that you mention it now.
But I'll say it. A Quiet Place. I was not as floored by that film as everybody else seemed to be. I didn't think it was. You know, it's not a terrible film, but I definitely had issues with certain aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get more into it because I know you liked it more than I did. And this will probably show up on your worst list, Bill. The Cloverfield Paradox I thought was okay.
What? Piece of shit.
I gave it a 3 out of 5.
God, I wouldn't even wipe my ass with that movie.
No, I'd wipe my ass with that movie. So
that movie's awful.
Say what you will about that.
That movie's garbage.
Moving on.
Oh God, you're giving me the vapors.
There's another movie
that
might,
the vapors.
There's another. All right, Scarlett, just calm down.
I don't give a damn either.
Yeah.
Sons of bitches.
And the last one I have on my just good list was The Ritual. And we did a show on The Ritual earlier this year.
Yeah.
As well. I still have the book from when you loaned it to me, Bill. And I'm going to make a point to read it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you left off with The Ritual. That's what I gave 3.5 stars to.
Oh, okay.
I thought the movie was a great compliment to the novel, and I thought what they did with the movie in regard to the third act was better than the actual novel.
So, right, and you told me.
Right.
That,
yeah. I love Terrifier, 3.5 stars. I'm not a slasher fan, but this is one of my top 3 slashers of all times.
Wow.
Greg Palko of Palko Designs said you need to see it. He was right. It was just a breath of fresh air to that tired, hackneyed subgenre.
You know what, Bill? I gave that like 4 out of 5. I was really not expecting anything from it, and I really liked it a lot. So
awesome.
Mark this date in history that Greg Palko, you and I
agree
on a movie.
All right. Nice. Thank you, Palko.
Yes.
Ghost Stories. I don't even remember. I have it written here. UK thing.
Yeah,
I
heard of that.
I know a lot of people put Hereditary on a major pedestal. It has... It has some wonderful elements to it, especially Alex Wolff, one hell of a young actor. I mean, absolutely amazing performance. They had some really cool scenes in there, excellent cinematography, but the story was disjointed in some ways, and the buying the whole family element, it was just like a little weird and bizarre and just didn't congeal. So I give that 3.5. And The Mouse from Spain, which I gave 3.5 stars to, which had a had some real tense filled moments that I enjoyed.
You said that was French, Bill.
Spain.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Close, John. A wonderful romance nation.
I haven't even heard of that one. So.
Yeah, and Ghost Stories and the Ritual were from UK.
Right, so. And Ghost Stories was, I think, an anthology.
Yeah.
From what you can remember.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, it's not like I power watch these things, but after a while, it just, you know, if it isn't like at that super top part, I don't really recall.
It sort of blurs, yeah.
So what about you, man?
My very goods, which would be like the 3.5 range. I really liked the Irish horror film The Cure.
Yeah, I need
not to
see
be
that.
Confused with the band that's going to be inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The good twist on the sort of zombie mythos. And you know, for all the crap that we have to sit through with bad zombie movies, they're usually a handful a year that actually do something interesting with notions of that, and this is definitely one of them. Another good performance from Ellen Page. I really was impressed with the Stranger sequel, Pray at Night. Was not expecting anything from it because the first film is one that does not have much replay value for me. I remembered liking it in the theater and then watching it maybe two more times on home video and being extremely disappointed by it. But this one was very, very good. It kind of captures the spirit of the original without kind of falling victim to some of the dumber aspects of it. And there are some pretty epic set pieces. Probably the most popular one, which a lot of people talk about, is the swimming pool scene, which is extremely, I'm going to say, high water mark for horror in 2018. Mark over at the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast is also a big adherent to that film. And also the Puppet Master, The Littlest Reich. Now, okay, we can talk.
You gotta right your wrongs, Johnny.
Yeah, I know. Well, they kind of righted a wrong with this one after I don't know how many films they were just doing wrong. But I told Billy I picked up a Puppet Master, like it was like a 10 movie set at a library sale, and I asked.
That's what I got too.
Yeah, it's like I asked online, should I bother watching all of these movies before I watch The Littlest Reich? And most people were like, no. And Bill was like, yeah, just stop after the third one. So I kind of was like, yeah, I'll stop after the third one, since that was the only really good one.
Yeah,
the
third one was the best Richard Lynch, man.
Yeah, and I would say this one is... I would say that The Littlest Reich is probably the best of, you know, out of the four movies I've seen in that series.
That's cool.
Written by S. Craig Zahler, who
incredible.
We know, yeah, from Bone Tomahawk. I really liked Brawl and Saw Block 99, though a lot of people didn't.
No, Bone Tomahawk, that was like, wow, that was a great that was a great injection into the horror schematic.
Well, it was just so unconventional, you know.
Which is beautiful.
It's a horror western, you know, yeah. Just
and a good one, for once.
Very, a very literate piece of pulp, too. So, Puppet Master, the Littlest Reich was a lot of fun. Very, if you can find laughter in films like Postal and the Inhuman Centipede 3, then this will be right up your alley. And I realize that's kind of a niche group of people. So,
yeah.
But I found a lot to like in that. So, those are my very goods, Bill. I have my...
No, you might as well go to them, because I don't have...
You don't have anything?
My best is a 4-star, and that's what you're talking about right now.
Okay. All right. Well, I did want to give a shout-out to the magnificently smart-alecky Dave Kay.
Woo!
Who...
A fiend on film.
Yes, on Twitter, who did a very good short film that saw release this year called Death Comes Twice. It's about 12 minutes long, but it's manages to hit with a lot of impact with no dialogue. It's just black and white imagery, and it's very well done. Shot on a Samsung Galaxy 7, I believe. The Predator, which I know was a contentious film this year, but it falls for me. It falls into the same category as The Meg. It was a lot of fun to watch.
Stupid fun.
Yeah, and I mean, is there? I don't know. Is that so wrong that a movie is fun? I thought it delivered.
And yeah.
I thought the cast was good.
I still haven't seen it. It's on my list. But, yeah. Like I watched John Wick 2 yesterday. It's totally preposterous. It's but I checked my brain at the door and I had a good time. I enjoyed the ride, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
John Wick shot 100 people in the face. Like, I'm all right.
You know, one of my favorite parts of John Wick 2 is when he's in the art gallery and it's like he's making Jackson Pollocks on the wall with people's
exactly.
brains.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, that's beautiful.
I think
I shed a tear, actually.
Yeah, it is art. So yeah, it falls a bit
Ruby
into
Rose and,
Yeah,
Bridget Moynihan and Only Pictures.
Yeah, and Ruby Rose was in The Meg as well, so.
I love her, man.
Yeah, I do.
She's hardcore awesome.
Yeah. And, Bill, did you see...
Common.
Yeah, have you seen The House That Jack Built yet?
No, it's on my list, man. I just didn't get to it before tonight's show.
Okay. That one was kind of a close call, whether to put that with my top five.
Because Lars von Trier can be...
An asshole?
Yes.
Yeah, he is one of those people like Tom Six or Gaspar Noé, who's kind of part of his... Part of his thing is his provocateur nature, you know.
But Tom Six is like, here it is.
Yeah.
And Lars von Trier is like, You know, like, there's a big difference in the attitude.
Hitler had some good ideas.
Tom Six is a blast. He's like, this is what you're going to get. And Lars von Trier, it's like, I don't know, there's an obnoxious element.
Well, there's, I think the pretentious tag gets tossed out with him, and I can see, you know, he makes movies because he wants them to be divisive, and he wants people to get pissed off. So this falls into that, depending on your temperament towards his stuff, you might...
Dogville Killed, man.
Yeah, that was fantastic. You know,
brilliant.
You know, this is another experimental kind of thing from him. But Matt Dillon is fantastic. And
awesome. Matt Dillon sat behind me at the Psychedelic Furs concert, 1983,
really?
At the Capitol Theater in Passaic. It was friggin' awesome.
Really?
Yep.
Really? Did you talk to him?
No, he was wasted. He was gone. I mean, gone.
This was around the fucking Outsiders time.
Yeah, I don't think he knew a show was going on. He was gone. Sorry, Matt.
Is he from Jersey?
He should be. He's
okay.
Because that's pretty cool.
All right. We did a show on this one. I loved it. Billy did not. Coralie Farges.
Oh, jeez.
Revenge, and this is the film.
Oh, my God, she fell to her death. Oh, wait, she's not dead. Yeah, 100-foot drop, spirit on a tree. Yeah, you're right, she's fine.
See, Bill, this is the film that I thought was... that I thought What Keeps You Alive was similar to. So you might like What Keeps You Alive.
Okay.
You might prefer that to Revenge. I saw a lot of thematic and aesthetic parallels, so you might like what the other one did better. And this is one of the first ones I saw this year was Mickey Keating's Psychopaths.
I didn't. Yeah, I don't know how I missed that damn thing.
Well, it kind of flew under the radar, and it
why?
Didn't. I don't know.
Come on, Mickey Keo's got a whole freaking name going for him.
Yeah, and I was kind of contemplating, it premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival, and I was contemplating making a trip to go see it, but...
You should have.
But I was like, that's fucking New York. Nah,
come here, man. I would have driven you the rest of the way.
Yeah, we could have. But it came out, like, on DVD soon after, and that's how I saw it. You know, it's another interesting movie from him. I've said it before, I feel like he's kind of like the... sort of like the Brian De Palma of the horror genre, take that for what you will, and that he kind of takes all these old familiar things and kind of creates something new out of them.
Right.
But he does it in a really savvy, knowing way. Bill, are you going to talk about this one?
Yeah, but I don't have to if you want to bring it up now.
No, you can. We can talk about it.
All right, together. Cool. I gave you the same rating you did because I don't have a...
But it's in your top five.
Yeah, I don't have a 4.5... or a 5-star movie.
Okay. And Mom and Dad, which I talked about on one of our...
I still have to see that, too.
Again, a lot of fun. Nicolas Cage and Selma Blair are great in it. Mm-hmm. It's just very over the top, very... It's from Brian Taylor, who's one half of the team that brought us the Crank movies. so if you kind of like the Crank sensibility, you'll like Mom and Dad. That's pretty much all that needs to be said. And I'm going to give this last one a shout out. Even though it's not categorized as a horror, the director, Simon Rumley, is known mostly for... is known for his horror films. He did Red, White, and Blue.
Oh my God, what a movie.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Which is a very, you know, reality-based horror film. He did The Living and the Dead, which is also a film that really kind of blew my mind with its depiction of the elderly and being taken care of, kind of, and
yeah.
all of this stuff. So he's done some really interesting... He did the bitch segment of Little Deaths, which was also a really... impactful.
Oh, that so, what a great anthology, man.
Yeah, that's a fantastic.
You need to see Little Deaths, everybody.
Yeah,
brilliant.
You turned me on to that one, Bill. So, but he did this movie that also kind of flew under the radar, like Psycho Pass, called Fashionista. And it's just, I don't even really want to say much about it. It's got Ethan Embry, it's got Amanda Fuller from Red, White, and Blue, and it's just a very unconventional film, but it's very based in reality, and it has some of the most heart and throat moments I saw this year in a movie, and as far as I know, it's still streaming on Amazon Prime for those of you who are Simon Rumley fans and or who like really offbeat stuff. I would highly recommend checking out Fashionista.
All right,
so
so that's it. So now we're going to the best of the best.
Yeah, and do you want to, like, alternate, Bill? Like,
I guess so.
Start.
What the hell, man?
You give one, I give one.
What the hell, man?
What the hell?
I'll start with my... All of mine are 4 stars. All of mine are really damn good, but not, like, hyper-gasp-worthy. That doesn't mean I might not change my mind later. I might need
Did
to see
watch
it
again.
Yeah, but... I'll start off with the only commercial one on my list, because it lived up to the hype. I thought the trailers were some of the best I'd seen, without giving too much of the story away, at least the initial trailer, but that was John Krasinski's A Quiet Place. And what I loved most about this movie was, it's great, it's a quiet place. People need to be quiet because there's some sort of whatever out there, and that's like, take, you know, destroy the planet. And the use of sound in that, I thought, was amazing. I really enjoyed it. It gave me... I remember, like, jumping in my seat 6 times, and that's a pretty good judge. Emily Blunt's wonderful. John Krasinski's fantastic. Millicent Simmons, you know, as the one daughter, she did such an excellent job. They had a really cool creature in there. They had a cool storyline. The only thing I didn't like, there was 2 things I didn't like about the movie that stopped it from being hyper awesome. One, a lot of people complain about, you need to be quiet, but this woman, she's giving birth to her 4th child. And yeah. And people are like...
And the child was conceived after this threat presented itself.
Yeah, not a really responsible thing to do.
No.
But the thing is, so the mother goes into labor, and it's like, if she makes noise, oh my gosh, she's going to get, you know, creamed by this whatever. And the funny thing was, you know, people like, ah, man, she'd be screaming, she wouldn't be quiet. When I was in a police academy many moons ago, as first responders, we had to learn how to bring a baby into the world, you know, how to help a woman with delivery. So we saw, we had to watch a series of films, and most of them were women who were having their first child, labor-intensive, pain, you know, had to use drugs sometimes. Some women were in labor for multiple hours. But I remember one woman who was having her 5th child, not her 4th. She was at home in bed with her family around, they're all smiling, the mother's smiling, the woman goes into labor, and that kid comes shooting out like it's on a friggin' slide.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and yeah. Like, no pain, nothing, just, wah! And it, like, in my, like, in seconds, it was... So, I, you know, I thought that was fine. The one scene I didn't like was the one with the kids in the silo, and it became, like, a ludicrous thing that Steven Spielberg would do. that I hated. And when a mother... and a wife has to tell her husband, protect the children at the end. It's like there was no need for that. It was stupid. It was awful. Then you knew what was coming after.
You're just saying that line was stupid.
That line, yeah, it was so, like, I would have said, like, if I were a husband, I would have said, well, what the fuck do you think? Like, what the fuck, honey? Like, what are you drinking again? What's going on? I was like, that was ridiculous. But it, for a commercial horror, it was great. I thought it was, they did a really good job. So.
Yeah, I.
That's on my bottom end for that.
No, there were some things that I saw this in the theater. I saw like a matinee on a weekday, so it wasn't very. It wasn't very full. There were a couple other people there, but the thing about this movie that I was really impressed by was that it shut everybody up. You know, true to its title, it's you know, you don't have the rude asshole like talking back at the theater to the screen. Everybody was just like dead silent, you know, and that was kind of cool that everybody was hooked in that way,
right?
You know, to the, and that on the movie's wavelength like that. I'm glad I watched it a second time because my girlfriend of all people wanted to watch it, and I think part of it was her father is hard of hearing.
She
kind of wanted to see how they handle that because Millicent Simmons, I believe, is deaf in real life.
Right.
So.
I love that.
Yeah. So that was kind of cool. But
not that she's deaf, but I love, you know.
The inclusion of.
And it added so much to the movie, I thought.
Yeah,
she was great.
Yeah, she was. And so there was some stuff that I had issue with when I saw it in the theater, but then when I saw it a second time, I was like, oh, well, this makes sense now. Like the one thing about the nail on the step.
Kind of,
I was like, oh,
it's like contrived.
Yeah, and actually, I missed the fact that the nail was raised up in the step because she dragged the clothes on it. At first, I thought the nail was just sticking up the whole time. I was like, why the fuck didn't they fix this nail? The other thing I had a problem with was how the fuck did they schlep all of that equipment down into the basement, ostensibly after the apocalypse?
Yeah, over time. Yeah.
Though I've heard some explanations of it that the fact that John Krasinski's character is messing around with like this hearing aid or whatever down there, so
he's probably doing that forever.
People were saying like, "Oh, he's like
workshop.
He's a tinker, so that stuff was probably already been some of that stuff might have been down there."
Well, and logic would dictate. I mean,
like, but it looked like security surveillance stuff that they brought down there. Right.
Well, yeah. They were like not in a city or anything like that. They were out, you know. So like, if I were an alien creature coming down and wanting to attack a planet, like it's like if you have superior technology, you go to their cities and you take
the
them
populated
out
areas,
to like really disrupt everything, and mess with people's heads for the psychological factor. Or if not, then you go the route of General Douglas MacArthur in World War II, and you go hit them where they ain't.
Mm-hmm.
And you would hit those places. But apparently they didn't, and I think you would have time with neighbors and friends, which they did have. Hey, Tony, come over. Help me move this shit. You know, we'll be quiet as possible.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
And then one person was saying, well, why didn't they have their house next to the river? And it's
that's the other thing.
It's just like stupid because like they're not. He's not going to – Krasinski's and his family, they're not going to build a freaking house. And, like, all that noise and crap. They have an established house. And you're not near the river, which could flood and everything else. Now that everything's down and you don't get news, you don't know, like, you know, what's coming.
That's a good point, too.
Just, like, just be quiet. And when you want to talk and have a good time, you go to the river and you go near the falls, you know. Just.
I do think it was interesting that there was still so much in that house that was conducive to making noise. And there was the totally contrived step pattern they had to follow once they walked in the house to avoid
that. I thought was cool. Yeah,
floorboards.
That I thought was really cool. Okay. Though I liked that because like, what are you gonna do? I mean, you could nail everything down a million times, but then it's probably gonna make noise again at some point. Like, okay, this is the way it is. Don't step anywhere but here, and it's gonna be okay, and you don't have to worry about it later on.
What did you think about the sequence where they're in the bunker in the barn, Bill, and there's was there a sink flooding or something that caused the flood down below when Emily Blunt?
She was in the bath down there?
Well, no, it was like after the
change.
Something was flooding into the room.
Right, right.
But I think you probably only saw it in the theater, right?
I did. I saw it in the theater.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't... I remember that, sort of. It didn't really bother me from what I remember.
Okay.
I was more bothered by the silo thing where I was like, what, like, Spielberg do this? And like, oh, it's going to be scary, but not too scary for kids. And it was like, and a little hokey and a little like, I don't know. That was, that really bothered me.
I mean, I thought that was contrived too. Would that, and from a physics standpoint, would what they did have worked in that situation?
I just wondered that too.
I know, because I was like, if someone's really into physics, let us know.
Yeah, we need a physicist on this show.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you didn't expect to need that for the best of, but so yeah, I had some issues and that knocked that one down a couple pegs for me. So
Well, pick your number five.
Well, you know, I know you haven't seen this one yet, Bill.
I wanted to, but I missed it in theaters. I'm pissed.
And the theater is the place to see it, but you know what? I think a lot of people will be seeing it on video when it comes out, and it is Julius Avery's Overlord. I didn't have a lot of expectations for this. I got to admit, I love the trailer for it, which makes great use of AC/DC's Hell's Bells, very appropriately. It's essentially, the way I've been selling it to people who haven't seen it, is it's Inglourious Bastards meets The Thing.
That's, dude, I want to see it.
And that's like all you really need to know, because that is only, imagine Inglourious Bastards if the director wasn't a wanker who was totally obsessed with his own genius like Tarantino is. It is an epic feeling horror film, and just from a sheer spectacle standpoint, I was blown away by this movie. It's also one of the most violent things I saw in the multiplex all year. I was really surprised at how gory it got in that sort of John Carpenter, The Thing sense.
Oh, nice. Man. I went to the theater, but it was gone.
No, I know, Bill. Tell the theater. Tell them to bring it back. Damn it. Bring it back.
I wanted the Overlord.
Yeah. Right, go ahead. But no, it has, you know, from the opening scene onward, it really, like, grips you. The action is strong and well rendered and very, just like, it's very much like boom in your face. I'm not sure if some theaters were doing this in IMAX or not, but I mean, it would have been totally fucking killer in IMAX. But it's got a great cast. You know, it's sort of a bunch of soldiers who are on this mission to take out, I believe it's like a radio transmitter tower operating out of a church in this small German town in I think it's in France, but it's during the Nazi occupation. And it's just this simple kind of conceit, and you're picking up information as the characters are picking up on it. It's one of those movies, Bill, where you're kind of like left in the dark as the characters are left in the dark. And I think, you know, I've said this
that
before,
I've said that
before, that, you know, when we're ahead of the characters and they have to catch up to where we're at, that's shit writing.
Totally. Yeah.
And it's got Wyatt Russell, Kurt Russell's son, to complete the connection to The Thing as one of our protagonists.
Dude, that just like...
And Wyatt Russell is pretty awesome. I mean, he was in Cold in July, which I really liked.
I've seen it.
22 Jump Street. He's been in a bunch of stuff. So, yeah, I would say if you missed Overlord in the theater, definitely...
Overlord.
Yeah, definitely check it out when it hits the home formats or streaming. It's definitely worth your while. I was shocked when I looked on IMDb. I was thinking this was like a $100 million movie. It was a $38 million movie that they managed to make look like over $100 million.
I gotta see this like now, like tonight.
You know, it's really rare, I feel, that we see... Like, Paramount bankrolled this thing. They released it. It's really rare that you see a horror movie of this epic scope and production value on the screen get released. And I feel kind of bad because it didn't really do gangbusters business. But it's definitely worth your time. Worth checking out. Like I said, Inglourious Bastards meets The Thing. It's kind of The Thing prequel, Bill, you probably wish we'd gotten...
Okay.
Instead,
say that piece of shit.
Taking it back a bit further, though, to World War II. But yeah, anyway.
This is a movie Johnny told me about that I really love. It's horror, crime, drama.
It's everything.
It's everything. The fantastical, definitely experimental in some ways, trippy.
Yes, yeah.
And it's Like Me from Robert Mockler, who wrote it as well, starring the phenomenal Addison Timlin. and co-starring Larry Fessenden, who we love to know, and...
He automatically gets a spot on the year-end list.
Oh, automatically. Yeah. I mean, Habit's still one of the greatest horror movies of all time and one of the greatest vampire films of all time. And the awesome Ian Nelson, who played a character named Bert. You know, like, this movie is a trip. It's cool. It's funky. It's artsy in a cool sense. I know Palco twitched at that. I could hear him. I heard the twitch over here.
Twitch of the death nerve. Yeah.
But it was a really cool, engaging, where are we going to go with this story? And excellent dialogue. A great pairing with Fessenden and Timlin.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great, weird adventure.
Yeah.
So I really loved all of it. And I think it's one of the best things that Glass Eye picks, you know, backed, you know, since Habit in 96.
Yeah, that's high praise.
Yeah, I love it. Love it. Great, great, great trip.
Yeah, you know what, Bill? I'm not going to say too much about this one because I actually have a review of it that I'm going to be sending your way soon.
Oh, right.
But the way I discovered this movie was someone wrote a review of it on a site that I tend to frequent. I was just struck by the poster image of the film.
It just
really stood out to me. And I found, I was on a website that I frequent to buy movies, and they had it for sale, and I just blind bought it.
And great purchase, man.
Yeah, and I was just like, it was all because of that damn, that poster's damn awesome poster, which is a piece of art.
It's purple and blues, and the rat on her shoulder.
You can kind of see the gun between her legs, mm-hmm. and yeah.
It's like, what's going on, man?
It's trippy kind of fantasy, mm-hmm. yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it's really intriguing. And it's funny because, like, the way this poster presents, it's like, I want to go up to that woman and talk to her, but I don't want to go up to that woman and talk to her at the same time.
You're intrigued, but you're frightened. Like, yeah.
That whole push-pull effect.
Yeah, and it's a very good, it's just very good at what it does. I kind of, afterwards, I was like, I was thinking it was Ingrid Goes West, which was a fantastic film about social media celebrity meets Gummo. That's how I felt. But it's very good. Yeah.
Yeah, really intriguing movie. Definitely check it out. It's definitely worth it.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a nice little sleeper.
Yeah.
Well, Bill, you're going to hate me, but hopefully not for too long.
Oh, jeez,
that piece of shit.
That movie, it's not on my worst list because I've seen a lot more hideous than that. But
well, I'll take that for what it's worth.
It's in my most disappointed list.
Okay, well, I'll take that over it being on the worst list. It is Unsane.
Sorry, go ahead, Johnny.
Another film shot on a cell phone. You know what?
Tangerine's a thousand times better.
Well...
Did you see Tangerine?
I have not seen Tangerine.
What the fuck, man?
I need to see all of Sean Baker's movies.
Sean Baker is the man. One of my favorites.
I need to see The Florida Project, too. So,
Well,
this was Steven Soderbergh's movie from a script by Jonathan Bernstein and James Greer. And you know what, Bill?
No, I don't.
You told me you saw this with Cheryl. Then I was like, oh, I guess I got to see it. We did a show on it.
Yeah.
So if you go back to April, you'll find our show and hear our heated discussion about the merits or lack thereof in this film. What stuck with me the most was a performance.
Yes.
Claire fucking Foy.
Yes.
Totally blew me away.
She's amazing.
In this movie.
She's amazing.
So say what you will about the movie, where the script goes, but her performance is beyond, you know, it transcends pulp. And the film is mostly, it's essentially like a thriller premise from the 90s, kind of, that you would see on cable. But Claire Foy elevates this thing to fantastic heights. This was the first thing I saw her in. I know she's in The Crown, that TV show.
She's a lot more now.
Yeah, and she was in, unfortunately, The Girl in the Spider's Web, which was a disappointment that was beneath her. But that wasn't her fault. But I was blown away by her performance. It's a great kind of is she or isn't she. That's the tagline of the movie. Young woman admitted to a mental institution. Bill shaking his head. for the
a mental institution that would not exist in the United States. It's stupid.
Bill, apparently it exists in Pennsylvania.
No, it does not.
You mean the movie lied?
Yes, yes. The movie lied in big, bad, dramatic, awful, pathetic ways.
I fucking loved Unsane. And I also wrote a review for, unfortunately, the now defunct Loud Green Bird site, but it's still over there if you want to check it out, and where I lavish more praise upon it. I thought it was a fantastic experiment, and it's a movie I still think about regularly, and that performance was... Seriously, people were talking about Toni Collette getting nominated for an Academy Award. Fucking Claire Foy should be nominated for an Academy Award.
Yeah, and...
But that's just my feeling.
And Jonathan Pryce should have been nominated for The Wife, which is a really, really bad movie. And Glenn Close was like... I love Glenn Close, but like, oh...
Yeah, I didn't see that one because you said it was bad.
Yeah, oh, it's... I almost threw stuff at the screen. Does that mean it's my turn?
It means it's your number three, Bill. Yeah.
My number three. Yeah. The great Greg Palko of Palko Design. So there was a movie I had passed by because I'm sick of... I just can't take religion and horror movies like right now. It's oversaturated with possession stuff and I've just
too much.
Freaking had it.
Yeah.
And I saw this thing for Apostle, and I'm like, ah.
Oh.
And he's like, Bill, man, you need to see it. And because he was really impressed by it.
Mm-hmm.
So I put this thing on, and it's a UK-USA co-production, and it is very impressive. I was impressed by the epic nature of it.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't come, like, close... But to a degree, it did, mimicking some of these wonderful, epic films coming out of South Korea.
Oh, really? Like, what would you compare it
to? Well, I would compare it to, like, you know, some of, like, in regards to something like The Wailing,
where
it has all of this depth and these complex characters.
And it also has a religious component.
Yes, it does. Yeah. And this is written and directed by Gareth Evans. And
The Raid.
The Raid, exactly. And it stars Dan Stevens, who... must have had... He is so intense in, like, every scene. He must have had some sort of a breakdown. he had to have. And, oh, man. There's so many people in this. And I hate when they... Yeah, Lucy Boynton is just pure... Pure, unadulterated gold. She's absolutely amazing.
From the Black Coat Star.
Yes. Michael Sheen is wonderful. And it's a long... Not long, and I don't mean long in, it's 2 hours and 10 minutes, but it's an intriguing story full of depth, and there is a religion component, but it's completely different from anything that I had expected it to be, which was wonderful, but it's this, it's 1905, and it's this guy who's going on a mission to rescue a kidnapped woman. On an island where a religious cult is, and it is like, holy hell, man, what's going on? And as it progresses, it gets pretty intense and gory and in unexpected ways, and like these characters, what they go through, their ebb and flow and their dimensions are great. No one is maybe a couple of people are painted as like one way, but for the most part, you have some really great complex characters here. But Lucy Boynton, holy hell, she's from friggin' New York, man. And I thought she was British.
Oh, I thought she was too. She was in that movie Sing Street. Maybe which she was British.
That would be funny if she was born in New York and they rushed her off to the UK or something.
Yeah, she was born in New York.
Born in New York, man.
Yeah.
Da 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 da. Let's see. Being born in New York and grew up in London.
So okay, there we go. Yeah.
But, oh my God, she's just absolutely terrific in every way.
Yeah, it looks like she could be in the Neon Demon.
Oh, yeah. She should have been.
Yeah. You know, Bill, I actually haven't...
Highly recommend it.
Okay, I haven't seen it. I've heard some interesting things about it. Did you feel like it stuck the landing, so to speak? Like, there were... Did you feel like it did a good job seeing everything through? Because I feel like there have been some comments about how it maybe doesn't quite make it all the way in terms of quality, I guess. Without saying too much.
No, I think it does. And it has, again, one of the great end lines because of, I can't reveal that end line. It doesn't match the end line to Martyrs, but it says so much about some of the thematic elements in the story. And after one character says this important line, how the other characters react, and it's like, whoa. You know, it's almost like the three burials of Estrada Melquiades, where, you know, he says, hey, do you need any help? And you're like, anybody watching this, like, 3-hour movie, it felt like 3 hours.
I don't think it was.
It's a great movie, though.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my gosh, this guy, for the first time, he, like, you know, it's one of those type of endings. So I thought it was perfect. I thought it really came to an appropriate resolution.
Okay, that's good, though.
I was very pleased with the ending.
All right, fantastic.
So I don't know what people are not catching about the ending.
Okay, I just heard some things and just kind of very
well. Big, they're wrong, Johnny.
Big terms. Okay,
freaking wrong.
Very well, very well. My number three film is Suspiria,
which I was upset that I missed because I couldn't find it near me. I live in a small freaking weird place.
You probably would have had to go to New York to
I probably would have had to go to New Jersey somewhere, but I didn't see it playing any place.
Well, I was very fortunate to have it come to Lancaster of all places. There's a nice kind of progressive art house theater in the city that takes a few more chances than the theater near me in Harrisburg, because that's also where I saw the house that Jack built there as well. So they get the more edgy genre stuff. That the
cool stuff.
Yeah, whereas the one that's near me tries to kind of toe that upper middle class senior citizen line with the stuff they carry.
It's like where I grew up in Kearney, man.
Yeah,
in Kearney, you'd go to the stinking Lincoln, the Lincoln Theater, to watch all the commercial shit.
Yeah,
and you'd go to the Warner in Harrison to watch all the B movies.
Nice.
You know, it's like we would always go to the Warner.
Of course. Yeah. Why would you go to the stinking Lincoln?
The Lincoln was cool because that's where I saw Invasion of the Body Snatchers '78.
Where I
saw The Thing '82. Yeah.
Was it a nice massive theater? Then?
Yeah, because it was a theater from the '30s and
one screener then.
One screener at the time, and the ceiling was, it had this centerpiece
cathedral.
No, well, it looked like these long drapes, and they were. And what they would do back in the day, they would collect water during storms so it would keep the building cool during the summer when they had theater shows.
Wow.
And now all that shit's lost because they made it into, like, they called it a triplex, so everybody thought it was triple X, so it became a porn thing. So they had to change everything at the stinking Lincoln. And then it was like, I was like, this is a little bit bigger than my TV set. Like, why am I?
Oh, man. Yeah. That's
and now the Warner doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah.
Which is sucks.
That does.
It's a community place, which is fine, but no more theater.
Yeah, so I decided to make the trip and check this film out, which I'd been curious about, mainly because of the cast. You know, you got the wonderful Dakota Johnson, who's up and coming, and hopefully she'll be doing...
She's arrived, man. Yeah,
hopefully she'll be doing more interesting stuff now that she's finished her obligation to the 50 Shades of Grey trilogy.
Don't even bring up... Don't mention that show on my show.
I know, that doesn't paint anyone in a positive light.
Fucking disgusting.
But I really like this film. Bill, I know you're not a fan of the Argento original.
Not even close.
This film might be the antidote to your...
Oh, I need to see it.
Yeah, and I think, again, it's weird. Like Overlord, there is kind of...
Mia Goth?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And Chloe Moretz is also in there. It's a dream.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, but, you know, it is a little Tarantino-esque in...
I'll take it.
In the structuring, kind of. It's done, like, with... It has, like, a chapter structure, but it's, like, 2.5 hours, but it doesn't feel like it. It really flows along in an interesting way. It says a lot of interesting things about kind of the battle of the sexes, even just the battle between women, kind of power struggles in this film. It's very fascinating.
Are there any men in this?
There are two policemen that are men.
Sons and, of bitches.
And there's also a psychiatrist that's
damn
a male
cops, man.
A male character. So they're
I'm joking.
Yeah.
So Jessica Harper?
Yeah, Jessica Harper comes back, yeah. But it's a completely different envisioning of the story.
Good.
But it's
the first movie's a joke.
Well,
I know I just got... I'm getting hate mail. I don't care.
No, you know, the thing is, Bill, the first film is known more for, like, the visual, you know, the visuals and the music.
Yeah.
But this one also has that, but it's also... it's in a different way. Like, Tom York from Radiohead did the score. It's fucking... it's fucking fantastic. It's eerie and moody, and just as... if you didn't like the Goblin score, you'll probably like it a lot more than the Goblin score. It's a very evocative score.
Spirit just made me laugh, and I'm like, this is ridiculous.
I directed a guy I knew on LiveJournal years ago to Suspiria, and he said the same thing. He said he just laughed through it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, but this focuses much more on story, much more on character, much more on more subtle symbolism, I would say. So I think
excellent.
I think when you see it, Bill, you'll just feel... my hope is that you'll just look at it and be like,
finally.
I want to have sex with this movie. I want to just like... I want to pick every part, you know, I want to pick every tiny detail of this movie apart.
Am I going to be upset and go, this was my best of the year and I missed it and I'm giving it 4.5 stars and putting it on my best of movie list?
Yeah, we can always do this show again, Bill, after see it. Yeah. But yeah. Luca Guadagnino is the director who last year did Call Me By Your Name, which got a lot of positive notices.
See that one either.
And the writer was David Kajanich, and he's only written a few things, and it seems like... I'd be wondering how much of, like, he was trying to include some autobiographical stuff in this film, but...
He did The Terror. The Terror's... something's weird with AMC, the way it comes over. Like, okay. The music always overrides the dialogue.
Oh,
it's the only station that does that where I live. So I couldn't watch anymore because I couldn't hear anything.
I think I heard good things about that.
Yeah, it's pretty potent.
Yeah, so he wrote the Pet Sematary remake last year.
Yeah.
But Bigger Splash was another Guadagnino film with Tilda Swinton.
Oh, The Invasion? Ugh.
Yeah. So he hasn't Patui. Actually... yeah, he hasn't written much, but...
The Invasion was awful.
Yeah, I think with Suspiria, Bill, there's that... there's a richer character element that I think you'll appreciate.
Okay, awesome. I'm looking forward to
it. It's definitely more... it focuses on the visual music, but it also focuses on character and story as well, so...
Well, so what do we do, man? Why don't you go with your number two? Because my number two is your number one. And I think it doesn't really matter.
No?
No, because...
you didn't like...
No. That I don't know anything. So why don't you go again? Because my...
okay. All right.
All right. I don't know.
Here, so this is your number two, Bill.
Yeah, here's my list, man. This is... that's my number two. This is my number one.
Oh, okay.
But I can do my number one in like 10 seconds because...
well, I'll just do my number two then.
Right.
Okay. My number two was the sort of sci-fi, sort of horror, Annihilation, written and directed by Alex Garland, very loosely based off of the book by Jeff Vandermeer of the same name. One of the first movies I saw this year, and it just blew me away visually. Fantastic cast of women.
Wow.
Natalie Portman, Tessa Thompson, Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Uh-huh.
There's this incident.
Tuva Novotny.
Yes, the seemingly extraterrestrial incident, and that creates this sort of shimmering dome around this nature preserve.
The shimmer. From Jeff Vandermeer's book series.
I don't want to go into that shimmer, Mrs. Torrance. But I really like this movie a lot. I thought it was just very much an experience kind of watching it. You're as disoriented as the characters. You're not sure what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You're picking up on stuff as the characters are picking up on stuff, even though there is sort of this like alternating timeline going on
where
Natalie Portman's character is flashing back to...
she flashed in that movie?
No.
You read the book too, right?
I read the... yeah, well, what do you think? I know you didn't like the movie.
I gave it 2.5 stars. Yeah. I had some issues with it. There were things in the book that didn't come through in the movie, but...
did you like the book more?
I liked the book more, but even the book left me going, eh.
Mom.
And the movie left me going, eh. So I am, eh.
Yeah, I didn't like the book, really. No, I thought it was okay.
It was okay. I knew people who were swooning over it, and I read it, and I'm like, did I miss something?
I mean,
when we like, talk about it, it's like I didn't miss anything, but they're swooning over it, and I wasn't.
Yeah, right? And I mean, and I just felt like it was one of those books where he was making shit up as he went, but...
It didn't feel solid, and
yeah, that was the problem.
And in the movie, there were some things that I just like, especially near the third act. I was like, there were things that they did, like they weren't supposed to be like some hardcore military team going in, but they're all like, you know, they were like scientists trying to investigate,
right.
And there were so many cool things in the book that didn't materialize in the movie, although the movie did have some great stuff in there, and. Some of it seemed rushed to me, or there are periods of the movie that were drawn out, and other parts where it seemed rushed. So
okay.
It didn't seem like it was. I don't know. Just it was like off. It was offbeat and not in a good way.
Yeah, it just didn't connect with you, really. You
didn't know. Jive.
Didn't jive. Didn't jive, Bill. I thought it was very good. I would recommend checking it out if you haven't. Yet I was just really taken with it.
And I could see, I wished it had worked on that with me, but it worked like that on me, but it didn't.
So that's fine.
That's a great number two, man. So so
how do we do
that? Well, then I'm gonna do my number, well, we're gonna just skip my number two because we're gonna talk about it in a minute.
Okay,
because I think the movie I have is like,
because your number one is, yeah.
My number one's completely different.
And I haven't seen your number one, no. So.
Yeah, so how do we do this? Do we just go to my number
or do you want
two, which is your number one, and then we do...
Yeah, sure. Let's do it that way. All right,
so bring it up then.
Okay, and this is a film that is extremely divisive. I can name probably at least three people who listened to our show that did not like this movie.
Easily.
But I loved this movie.
Wow, Johnny, that was frightening.
I had an orgasm, Bill.
I know, I wish I wasn't next to you.
Yeah.
It's getting sticky in here.
Cheddar Goblin. How did you get in here, Cheddar Goblin? I'm talking about Panos Cosmatos' Mandy.
Will you kiss me and stop me from shaking?
Yes. No, I'm not going to, Bill.
I'm in Mandy.
Yeah. This is a revenge film. However, it is a very psychedelic, very visual, very aural experience at the same time. This isn't Death Wish.
No, not even close.
This is Death Wish Goes to the Cosmos kind of thing.
Death Wish Goes to Mars.
I know. It's like Blue Velvet was the Hardy Boys on Mars. Mandy is Death Wish on Mars.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it is.
But I don't know, Bill. What do you say? What do you say?
I love
this
movie a lot.
Yeah.
I watch it. I know as soon as I watch it again, I might up it a half star, and it might be, you know, on my best of list.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting film because Way Panos, it has a pace to it, it has a rhythm to it.
Yes.
That's intriguing, and I know some people might have been bored by it. I wasn't.
Yeah.
Because I thought the characters were so compelling. You know, Nick Cage, he's just rocking it. Andrew Riceboro is just always absolutely delicious. And Linus Roach, man.
Oh,
wow, what a son of a bitch, man. His character, man, they nailed it. It's really intriguing. It was one of those films that had a sense of place where things are a little off and a little different. And you can't really say, am I in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, you know? Which I did like. Unique sets, unique storytelling overall.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was very compelling, very enriching. There's a reason why this isn't my number one, actually. And the reason it's not my number one is because I think this is a film that the one I chose is like some... this is just... they're all four-star movies for me, so it doesn't matter what I pick.
Sure.
But I wanted to pick something a little bit different that people might not have seen. But this movie was just really engaging, and I loved what it became, how it changed, how the movie grew, and where it went, and how badass it got, and... And it had really disturbing elements to it as well. It was a real potent picture, man.
Yeah.
It affected me on a lot of different levels.
No, I had the good fortune to see this in theaters back in September when it came out. Just due to random circumstance, I was in New York City for a couple days for a music festival. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, me and my friend, we're in fucking New York. Let's go see something that we can't see, you know, in central Pennsylvania. And this popped into my head. I was like, let's go see Mandy. It was playing at an IFC theater in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a 50-seater, and people kept filing in even after the movie started. And I think the theater was full by the time everybody was settled. Gotcha. And the reactions of people were fascinating to me because people were really getting into this.
Well, I wish I'd seen it in theater.
Like, people were laughing at the jokes, and people were, like, cheering when the vengeance was being doled out. It was really becoming this interactive experience. And one of my favorite things was when we walked in and showed the ticket taker our tickets, the guy said, Mandy, this movie will change you. And it was just a really great experience. You know, it might have been the best experience I had watching a movie since I saw Grindhouse mm-hmm. in the theaters over a decade ago. You know, just that level of audience participation and reaction, kind of in a good sense, though, not in that, oh, it's just a bunch of assholes who are screaming at the screen kind of thing. But, you know, I watched it again. I picked it up right away when it came out on Blu-ray, right around Halloween, and I watched it again, and I loved it. But it was a movie that stuck with me
mm-hmm.
long after watching it. I still think about it.
I do, too. It's just, but like, the use of color and everything in this, it sets a tone mm-hmm. that doesn't leave. And Benjamin Loeb did the cinematography.
Yes, yeah.
Freaking amazing work. But one thing I loved about this and the movie Like Me is there's it only seems like it happens with these movies that are like trying to take us on some sort of a trip that's off the beaten path, is the exposition is not gigantic, it's not intense, it's like the backstory stuff not big,
mm-hmm.
like there's small doses of stuff, like we know something horrendous had happened to Riceboro's character.
Yes, which is it's horrible.
Yeah, it's horrible, but it's like you know, we just get enough information for Mandy Bloom.
Yes.
And Red Miller. I mean, it's like just this like great, and Jeremiah Sand, I mean, Brother Swan. I mean, the names are just fucking great. And it's like we just get enough information, but I thought they were some, you know, like they were just really deep characters that we got to know like that.
Yeah.
When we watch other movies for two hours and we're like, who was that guy? We don't know.
You know,
and we don't even care.
Yeah. And I think the thing with Cosmatos, who also did Beyond the Black Rainbow, which is more about visuals and sounds than words.
This had more meat.
Yes, it did. It did. Black Rainbow is more of like a real acid trip, kind of sit there and just soak it in kind of thing. This has a bit more, this is a bit more plot driven.
Mm-hmm.
But something I liked, Bill, was kind of like you get just from simple gestures from like Red and Mandy. When Red comes back home, you know, to see Mandy, and she's sitting there sketching something, you know, and he just kind of like puts his arm on her and like looks at what she's doing. There's like just these little things of spousal appreciation these subtle things couples do that don't necessarily to other people might not look like a big deal, but are like huge
mm-hmm.
symbols of like love and affection and interest kind of. And I thought it was like those moments that really added to the impact of things, that when things go bad, you're like feeling it,
mm-hmm.
you know, more, because it's like, well, it's not a bunch of crappy dialogue saying, oh, I love you, I love you, I love you this much. It's not like that. You know, that's not how real people talk.
No.
So, you know.
Oh, yeah. It was great.
So I didn't think the film, you know, like I think some people feel that the film was missing that kind of dramatic core.
Fuck no. But I thought it was more real than anything else.
And I also want to mention that Bill Duke has that great cameo which feels absolutely Lynchian in the way he's just talking really slow and sounding really jaded. Like, he's essentially explaining to Nick Cage, like, this is what's going on. This is what you're up against. I'm not doing anything, but you can take this with you, kind of thing. Yeah. When they're in the trailer halfway through.
Oh man!
But anyway, I fucking love the movie.
So did I. It was fantastic. It was just excellent.
Yeah.
But so because of that, because I know it's a top of this movie seemed to be missing from a lot of people.
You know, someone told me about this one, Bill. I just haven't watched
it. And it bothered me because I'm watching this film, and I'm thinking, what the fuck is that? No, I'm thinking...
It's the Meg.
I hit the wrong damn button.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I hate IMDb's.
I know.
Oh, what the hell are you doing on my screen, man?
Get away, Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah. Zach. No, I... boy.
You may have a hard time with that, Bill.
Oh, because I spelled it wrong. Jeez, because I hit an O instead of a P. There we go. Bloop. There we go.
Okay.
Bloop. I'm watching this horror movie early on. Mm-hmm. Well, it came out in April, and it's a horror drama fantasy thing. And it's from director Akiva Goldsman.
Holy hell.
Exactly.
Because he's associated with some of the biggest, crappiest Hollywood movies ever.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm like, what the hell? But it's written by Ben Collins, who did... I always forget what he did.
Yeah.
He did a movie that a lot of people love, Super Dark Times.
Oh, fuck, I love that movie.
There you go, Johnny.
Jesus, I love that movie.
Jesus really cared that you wanted to tell him that you love that movie.
Jesus, thank you for giving us Super Dark Times, that's all.
In any event, he wrote Stephanie, and Stephanie is about... Apparently there's some global thing going on that's really hideous and awful, and we find this young girl, Stephanie, I mean a little kid, who's left alone to hide from this whatever evil is, and her parents like sort of return, and they're like trying to help her, and it's like, what's really going on? And you're wondering what's going on for like, I don't know, like a whole hour? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, what's going on? But it stars a young Shree Crooks.
I've heard of her.
That is her name, Shree Crooks. And
what else has she been in?
Not much, man, because she is a little damn kid. They don't have her age here, but she is young.
I saw her, I think she was in American Horror Story. Hotel.
Oh, that's funny. She was the little kid in Captain Fantastic, which is an excellent movie, not a horror.
Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah, so she's been acting since 2012. Mm-hmm. She's the lead of this movie, this little kid, what, 8, 9?
Yeah, her age is...
Some crap movie. Like that?
Yeah.
8, 9 years old. She is carrying this movie. Mm-hmm. The camera is on her through like 95-98% of it. And in the beginning, she is... It's just her. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, as like a filmmaker, you always hear from people, and as a screenwriter... You know, people like, well, don't want to work with animals, don't want to work with kids, it's such a nightmare.
Yeah.
And, like, here, Akiva Goldsman is directing this young girl to, you know, do what she does in the movie. And she goes through the whole gamut of emotions, tons of expression. She's just absolutely wonderful. And the only thing holding this movie back is questionable, semi-questionable special effects near the end. Not sci-fi channel bad, but like, could have been better.
Okay.
But it was just this wonderful, not wonderful, I mean, it's a horror movie.
Yeah.
This story of the journey of this child in an absolutely horrific time period, and the ending, I thought, more than satisfied.
Okay.
So I was just really impressed with it. I thought it was wonderful, and I'm surprised a lot of people haven't been talking about it, because it was just really awesome, man.
Okay, how did you, do you know how you saw this one, Bill?
Sheer unadulterated accident.
No, but I mean, like, did you see it through Netflix Prime? Okay, I'll have to check it out then.
Yeah, it was like a surprise.
Because that's a real surprise, because, I mean, Akiva Goldsman's kind of not...
I know.
He's not looked at favorably as a writer, but maybe if he's left to direct someone else's work, obviously, you know.
Yeah, and that's, do a that's good what job he did.
Yeah, that's cool. That's good.
So, yeah. That was that, man.
That is our best of the year, folks.
Woo!
Thank you for tuning in.
Yeah, now we're going to give you some scream outs to some wonderful souls.
The best souls of the year.
Wow. Wow.
Some of the best souls of the year. All right, there are a lot of good souls out there.
Yeah, and these are people you can find on Twitter, and the first one being B.J. Mendelsohn, author, comic book writer, and professional wrestling fan. Here I read about those things, and that's on Instagram and also on bjmendelsohn.com. Check him out. He is awesome. The excellent people who we love at Promote Horror, where they bring creators of horror and horror fans together. Their goal is to help spread the horror. Check out their excellent website, and I mean excellent, promotehorror.com. Who is Amy Cotto, TV fanatic girl? That is TV underscore fanatic underscore girl. She's a writer who loves TV and movies, and she loves her dog and horror films too. So check out her TV blog at tvfanatic.blog. And also she has a book on Amazon, so don't miss that. Amy Cotto. And the great Lisa Sorrentino, who is My Little Rascal 8, and that's part of the hubby and wife team making indie films. They have a new film coming out. They're out of Lancaster, PA, Johnny. You should have seen the movie with them.
I know.
We should get together with them.
Should have invited them, yeah.
Yeah, and they're on Facebook at My Little Rascal, The Embalmist. And that is Bree. And who's Bree? She's the owner of Macabre underscore Melts, and she's owns the TN Horror News crew. She's a witch, and she's in tarot and Ouija. She loves horror conventions, haunted attractions, horror movie, and she's also a horror movie reviewer. She's out of Nashville, and you could check her out at etsy.com/shop/ Macabre Embalmist. And, well, we'll save them for last. Okay.
Yeah.
Nick Yonker, N. Yonker, dark fiction scribe and horror editorial journalist. He's also a shameless reader and a smartass who loves horror movies, pizza, and trees. Rock on. Love it. He's out of Seattle, and you can find his work on Amazon, and that's Nick Yonker. Don't miss him. And, well, I'm not going to read that part. Ex-glamour girl. Glamour, it's UK way, O-U-R. She's a makeup artist, horror-obsessed, shark enthusiast, lady of many fandoms and adventures. And she is absolutely amazing. She's out of Chandler, Arizona. Check out her on Twitter, because she has some really excellent images that will blow your bloody minds. T. Weirdling. Who's that? The Weirdling, damn it. I read, watch, and listen to too much dark, creepy, weird, spooky, gory horror stuff. And this is where my cry for help went to die. So check out The Weirdling. And the wonderful Tracy underscore TR. She's the queen of Scream Radio. That's S-C-R-M. Save the E for Eerie. And she's at ScreamRadio.com, where you can get wonderful horror stories and even horror music. Don't miss that at all. And finally, a place that Johnny and I went to before we did the show.
Yes.
The great Banter Cider. Woo! Banter's Hard Cider. And they have 6 brand new locally brewed hard ciders in Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. And they're at 35 North 7th Street in Stroudsburg. Go to their website, bantersheartcider.com. They always have new ciders. It's always excellent. Great quality. We're taken care of by the lovely and vivacious Andrea, who is getting married to the phenomenal Tom. They both wore ugly sweaters, and of course they made them look fabulous, and they were both there, and they were great, and they're gorgeous, and love them dearly, and look forward to their wedding in October of 2019.
Bill, they are the only two people I know who can wear ugly holiday sweaters and look better than they already look.
Yeah, they're just, they're something else. So. Yeah,
they're awesome.
Yeah, they are. We love them. We love Banters. Steve Brancato, who owns Banters, one of the greatest guys on earth. Ugh. So just love the man and all he does and his beautiful family. So
absolutely. So, Billy.
That's it.
Where can people find you?
Oh, crap, I forgot.
Yeah, just do it.
Crash Palace on Twitter. Crash Palace Crash Palace Productions.com for links to this show and more. And go to Redbubble for merchandise for the Last Knock Horror Podcast and Crash Palace. Johnny.
You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Num. There are no H's in those Johnnies. And you can also find my movie reviews at Crash Palace Productions.
I like the movie reviews.
My movie reviews, Bill.
At Crash Palace Productions.com.
Publications.
All right. Goodbye, Johnny.
See you, Bill.